This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Greg Bresnitz. Welcome to our last episode of the summer session. We start the show in Los Angeles meeting up with self-proclaimed California girl, Gabby Dalkin, who's a chef, blogger, and author of the new cookbook, What's Gabby Cooking? Everyday California Food. Then we come back to Brooklyn with Active Bird Community, whose new record, Amends, is coming out in September on Barsook, who talks about the terrifying nature of putting yourself all out there in song. If you like what you heard and you're missing our voices for the rest of the summer, make sure to go back into our archives, listen to some old episodes, and leave us a rating and a comment while you're there. So sit back, relax, and welcome to another episode of Snacky Tunes.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes. I don't know why I want this to be yours, just for you. I don't care for what you care for I am only just for you. And it breaks my heart in two, 'cause baby it's you.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. We are sitting here in beautiful, sunny California, and I say that because we are with Gabby Dalkin, author, California girl of What's Gabby Cooking? Everyday California Food, second cookbook. Congratulations.
Thank you.
We're rocking some kombucha.
Yes.
This might be my most California moment
ever. We are having a California girl morning.
We are. So I have like an avocado in my bag. I got your cookbook on the table. The bucha's in front of me. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. So second, pumped.
Yeah, second cookbook.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
Thanks.
You're a California girl now, mm-hmm. but you started back in the Southwest, correct?
Yeah, I grew up in Tucson, Arizona, eating like all the Southwestern food and like heading down to Mexico every chance I could get. And for college, I moved up to San Francisco, and now I'm never leaving.
You're never leaving. But do you ever miss those green chili, those Hatch chili cheeseburgers?
I mean, all the time.
You would think that they would have them out here.
You would think they would have a lot more things in California that they don't. Like, it's funny, some things just don't make it out here.
I feel like they get stopped, like, at the California border.
At the border, yeah. They're like, too many, like, calories or something like that. I don't know. But we still go back to New Mexico all the time for Hatch chili season, and I will live it up.
I love them. I've had them there, and I've had them in, like, the hill country of Texas.
So good. And they, like, roast them in those, parking lot roaster things.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever they're called. I don't know. They're amazing.
Lottery roasters?
Yeah, basically. Right?
Lottery roasters. So growing up, did you love food, picky eater? What was it?
100% a picky eater.
Like, really?
I buttered noodles and grilled cheese. I'm not exaggerating you until I was 17 years old. I had my first steak when I was in high school, my senior year at my friend's house. Her dad made steak, and it's all he made, and I was like, shit, I guess I'm gonna have to try a steak.
So were you actively not into food, or were you just like, this is what I like?
I loved eating, but I loved eating, like, very basic things. And when my mom was a very picky eater and, like, doesn't like cooking, so there was just, like, very limited amounts of things at our house. We, like, grew up eating those. Do you ever have those Costco double chocolate chip muffins that are really just cake and muffin form?
Yes.
We would have those for breakfast every day. I'd have, like, a grilled cheese for lunch and, like, some sort of pasta for dinner, or, like, and chicken here and there.
You know, some people find comfort in food in the routine of it.
Yeah, and I still love the, like, I love, like, there's this one salad on my blog that I would eat every night if I could.
Shout it out. Which one?
It's this avocado kale Caesar. And
yeah, well,
the dressing's
course.
Made. It's basically like a hummus dressing. It's so good.
Vegan?
Yeah. But you could add salmon or chicken or steak or whatever you want to put on it. Whatever.
Yeah, but it depends on part of California you're in.
Yeah.
Because if you add that, then you might get kicked out of that part of California.
True.
So you're not into food, but how did you eventually make your way into the food world?
Yeah, so when I got to college, I was on the tennis team, and I started cooking for my team because it was my way of, like, sharing my love with everybody. And I only knew how to make chicken parmesan.
I was going
to
say, like, here, they're like, we love you, but we can't have butter noodles.
Here's a grilled cheese again. No, I learned how to make chicken parmesan. I watched the Food Network at the time when it was still, like, relevant. And I loved it and would cook for them every Friday night. And then after college, I got a job, and the whole company folded, like, 6 months into me being there. And instead of going to find another job, I decided to go to culinary school.
But how did you get there, though, for someone, and this is no offense, didn't really seem to think or care about food?
Because I loved eating.
Okay.
And I wanted to know how to cook other things. Like, I had a boyfriend at the time who's now my husband. I loved entertaining people. So I just wanted to have more in my repertoire that I could, like, pull out. And when I went to culinary school, I also got a job, weirdly, as a private chef, like, week two.
Do they know about your background?
Yeah, well, they were German and I'm German, so I feel like there was a lot of, like, love there. But I told them, I was like, upfront, I was like, I don't know how to cook fish, I don't know how to do this, but, like, I'm learning it next week in school. And then my culinary school teacher told me, like, if you don't learn how to eat and make all these things, you'll never hack it in the culinary world.
Sure.
And at that point, I wasn't planning on being in the culinary world forever. This was just, like, a fun thing to do in the interim. And I took that as a personal challenge, and now I eat basically everything.
What's off the list?
Any kind of offal, I'm not into it. Like,
did you dabble at all?
I've tried it all, but, it's not for me. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh my God, this intestine soup is so delicious.
I've tried it. I'm fine. Yeah. I'm fine with it. Like, it's not my number one.
Do you like pate?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not.
See, I love, like, pate and things like that, but the idea of just being like, and here's some kidneys and livers and things like that.
With you, 100%.
Yeah. Well, even though pate is liver. But just, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So, what year is this that you're in cooking school?
I started culinary school in 2009.
Okay. And at this time, you also start your blog.
Yeah. So the blog, the culinary school, and private chefing literally all started within 2 weeks of each other.
So let's set the scene for people who might not remember what 9 years ago about the food blog scene was.
Yeah.
What was the landscape?
It was, well, first it was ugly. Like, blog design was really ugly back then.
Little WordPress?
Oh, God. Mine was, like, black with neon colors. Like, it was so,
so good.
Tragic.
And all the fonts, different size.
So tragic. People were just getting started blogging. Like, a lot of people were blogging about their lives. It was kind of like the time mom blogging got big and food blogging was just starting. People weren't making any money off of it, so it was really a passion. At least in the food blogging world. And then I would say it didn't really pick up and get financially lucrative for a lot of people until like 2012, 2013.
But what made you, as someone who sort of just got into food, mm-hmm. who loved to eat but had a very small repertoire, want to start adding in that extra weight and time and pressure to make a blog about
food?
Well, because
I was living here in LA and right. my family was back in Arizona at the time, and I wanted to share with them.
Gotcha.
And I wanted to share with all my... I basically wanted to brag to everyone that I learned how to make fish.
Okay. And everyone's like, cool girl, like we did that.
Yeah, no, my friends didn't even read. My friends still probably don't read What's Gotta Be Cooking. Like, my mom is my number one fan and has commented on every blog post I've ever
Shout
done.
Shout out, that's what moms are for.
And then my girlfriends... Like, they'll come to my blog when they want a recipe, but they're not, like, avid readers.
Now, obviously, it's successful now, and you have a book, and you have over 1,000 recipes and that. But back then, what is the advice that you would give someone now or that you wish someone given you?
For sure.
When you got started, and not so much, because it's so easy to be like, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
But, like, maybe, like, a month in when no one's reading.
Right. So 3 years ago, I actually ended up doing a very big revamp for What's Gotta Be Cooking
sure.
because I didn't know what What's Gotta Be Cooking stood for. So I would tell someone, figure out what your voice is and what your message is and do it. Like, if I go back and look at my stuff 8 or 9 years ago, it is all over the place. Like, there's no cohesive thread.
Sure. But do you think that people have room to find that thread?
For sure.
You know?
Nobody can tell your story except for you.
Right.
So.
Would you just tell people to get started?
Absolutely. Like, you just start and it's not going to be pretty at first.
Yeah.
Mine certainly wasn't. But you need to, like, find your voice and your rhythm and whatever you want to do and make it work.
So as you're doing the cooking, the chefing, you've graduated, you're doing the blog, when did things start to coalesce into going, like, I have something here?
Yeah, so it was probably when I rebranded What's Gotta Be Cooking about, I think it was almost 4 years ago now. And I word vomited to one of my mentors for, like, a week. And she's like, this is so easy. Like, you're the California girl, obviously. Like, nothing's crazy complicated. All the recipes are very approachable and balanced. Done. And I was like, a light bulb moment went off in my head. And all of a sudden, things started coming together because I had this thread that I was telling throughout everything, whether it was on Instagram or my blog or on Snapchat or whatever I was using. I had a consistent point of view and people could really relate to that and pick up on it. And then things started really hitting it from there.
And how easy was it to stay focused once you had a clear point of view? Like, was it, you know, I'm sure once you start getting notoriety, it's easy to get distracted by some early successes. Like, how did you keep it all streamlined?
Yeah, well, I'm super organized.
Okay.
I live for a to-do list.
Great.
So that's incredibly helpful. And also, like, just knowing, I kind of live by this, and people make fun of it all the time, but I live by this saying, like, is it on brand?
Yeah.
So now that I know what my brand is, I think about that for everything I'm doing. And if it's on brand, great, like, let's go for it. If it's not, like, we have to pass. You know, it's just consistency.
Now, for the unfortunate people who have not had time to delve into the blog.
So sorry.
I'm so sorry. Take me through it, because there's a bunch of different sections. I mean, it really is a full sort of 360 lifestyle type of approach from meal planning to travel to everything, but talk me through it.
So What's Gotta Be Cooking started as just a food blog, and I would do recipes, and I think I have 1,700 recipes or something ridiculous on the site. It's aggressive.
And you made all of them.
I made all of them, and I've eaten all of them.
Wow.
That's why I work out all the time. And then from there, my parents take us on this thing every year called Surprise Vacation, and it's a trip where we don't know where we're going, and we've been doing it since I was 9, and we get clues leading up to it. And so 5 or 6 years ago, I started sharing the clues on the blog, and people were in it to win it. Like, my dad would get emails at 2 a.m, people trying to figure out these clues.
Can you give me an example of a clue and the place?
Yeah, so 10 years ago, one of the clues was, noisy sheep, tasty pig, ah.
Okay.
Noisy sheep says ba, a tasty pig is a ham, ah.
Oh.
We were going to the Bahamas. But, like, that's kind of an easy clue. They've gotten progressively harder and weirder as we've gotten older and smarter. So, I started talking about Surprise Vacation, which led to me talking about more travel and doing guides to different cities. And then I started getting into entertaining. So I would do, like, you know, here's how to do a paella party and everything to make for it. So it's turned into more of a lifestyle destination than just recipe blog.
And also, it's sort of just with pop culture and everything as well, like food, travel, entertainment.
It all goes together.
It all together.
People that love to eat also travel and entertain. Like, people, they're good people. So I'm just trying to write about what everybody wants. And it's what my life is about.
Awesome. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the first cookbook, which is probably the most California book.
Ever.
Ever, because it's literally dedicated to the avocado.
Yeah.
We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are sitting, drinking our kombucha with Gabby Dalkin, author of What's Gabby Cooking? Everyday California Food, second book.
Yeah.
Number two, but there was number one.
There was.
Which was a book completely dedicated to the avocado.
Yeah, and it came out as a joke. Like, it came about as a joke.
Well, it's titled Absolutely Avocado.
Yeah.
Did it come out of the website? Did it come out of the blog?
So, back in the day, this was like 7 years ago when I signed the deal. It was when people were really still talking on Twitter, like having full conversations with other people and connecting and like making really whatever. It was fun. It was what Instagram is now. And I was known as the food blogger who was obsessed with avocados.
Yeah.
So I was having dinner with this editor in New York, and he's like, I'm really trying to figure out the next generation of authors and what they want to write about. What would you write about? I was like totally joking, and I was a little tipsy, and I was like, avocados, duh. Right.
Of course.
And he was like, that's a great
idea. That's a great idea.
And then he bought it, and I was like, oh, I got to come up with 80 avocado recipes now. So I did, and my husband developed an allergy to them for a hot second, and now we're back in the game.
So I'm sure that there's like a base 20 or 25 that come to mind easy.
Right.
And then maybe the next 30 are like, okay, it's a stretch. But what were those last, they're like, 25,
it.
Like...
Avocado ice cream.
Sure.
Avocado banana bread. Any of the desserts, basically, are sure. A real stretch. They're good, but, like, I don't know. Now, looking back at it, if I'm going to have a chocolate chip cookie, I want it with butter. I don't want it with avocado.
No.
So, the desserts were a little bit of a stretch, but the rest of them, like, they're great. There's salads, there's appetizers, there are main courses. There's a little bit of everything for everyone in the book.
I mean, that's, like, a lot of avocado.
It's a lot of avocado.
And so during this time, this was still sort of a side hustle, right?
Very much a side hustle. I was still private chefing at the time every day, like 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. So I would go private chef. I'd come home. I'd recipe test. I'd write the blog at like 10 o'clock at night. I wasn't sleeping.
When did you decide to go full time?
When the first book came out.
Okay.
So that's when I was going on a very abbreviated book tour.
Sure.
And I was like, I can't just leave my clients that I private chef for like high and dry. I think I need to step away so they can find someone to take over full time. And if I'm going to make a go at making What's Got Me Cooking my full time gig, this is my moment.
Now, how did you take that leap? Did you start working with brands? Was there enough money from the book? Were you getting ads on the website? Because it's like, it's one thing to have the blog.
Yeah.
And it's one thing to cut the safety net of a job. How did you
pull that ripcord? The blog was making a decent amount of money at the time. I was making money off of ads. I was doing like very small brand integrations for like a couple $100.
And how would that work? Would some brand just come to you?
Come straight to me. I'd negotiate it. I wouldn't even negotiate it. I would take whatever they offered me. And like $200, great. That pays for groceries for a couple weeks. Like, done. I'll take it. And I had saved money from private chefing.
Sure.
So that gave me a little bit of a cushion to like go out and do it for 6 months. And if I failed, I could always go back. And I did. It worked. So I was okay. And I slowly started, you know, growing my audience. I eventually signed with a manager who now negotiates all my brand contracts for me, which is very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, obviously, you had the first book.
Mm-hmm.
But in many ways, the new book with Gobby Cooking feels like the first real book.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that as an insult, because...
I don't take it as an
insult. But this really feels like encapsulates who you are. It's your storyline. It's what you would think of the natural progression.
Yeah.
Despite having a fun little...
Yeah.
It must have been good to get the avocado book done, just because you go, okay, I know I can write a book. I know I can climb this mountain.
Yeah.
It probably made writing the book that meant so much more.
Without a doubt. And I learned how to write a recipe... I know exactly how it was very educational
sure.
for me, and I knew what to ask for when I got this book deal. Like,
I
knew I wanted creative control over how it looked and who the photographer was and all that kind of stuff. So that was very helpful for me.
You have beautiful pictures.
Thank you.
Who do you work with?
Matt Armendariz.
Shout him out.
He's my best friend, and his husband Adam Pearson is the food stylist, and the three of us do all the photos together for the book, for the blog, Instagram, everything. They are my second and third husband besides my actual husband.
Oh, okay. Who is Thomas, right?
Thomas, yeah.
Is Thomas okay with that relationship?
Thomas is so okay with that, because when I get like obnoxious, he's like, just go hang with Matt.
Okay, that's good. What's your setup?
What do you mean?
Studio?
Yeah, they have a studio down in Long Beach.
When did you go from out of your at-home kitchen to like a more sort of official setup?
Probably right when I rebranded What's Got Me Cooking full-time, so 3 or 4 years ago. And I used to shoot everything at home on my counter with a point-and-shoot and flash. It was real aggressive and ugly. And we've slowly been redoing all my old recipes, because some of them are my most favorite. And Matt and Adam shoot everything now.
Awesome. So let's talk about the book a little bit, okay? So 125 plus recipes, which you culled down from the 1700.
Yeah.
They're
all new.
They're all new?
Yeah. They're not from the blog.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are a few blog favorites in there, but for the most part.
For the most part. Okay. Because
yeah.
I thought I saw a few other favorites in there. Okay. So how did you start planning this? Because it sort of is, it's got breakfast, it's got... entertainment. I mean, it very much feels like a full approach to it, but what made you want to pick these recipes and go into this approach?
Yeah, so there was a lot of Q&A with my audience. Back in the day when Snapchat was still super relevant, I would ask
people. Wow, shots fired.
I know. Trust me, I'm like the biggest Snapchat fan, and the new like update just kind of is brutal.
I know.
I was the diehard though. Anyways, but when I would be at the seafood market, I would ask if they wanted clams or mussels, or if I was doing a flank steak, if you wanted this kind of rub or this kind of rub. And so there was a lot of, you know, asking people what they were looking for. to develop where I ended up. But when I pitched the book, the recipe list was completely different.
Really?
Yeah, I just ended up changing it. I wanted new things. I would like be inspired by something I saw at a restaurant or the farmer's market. So it really changed in the year I took to write it.
Well, one of the things I love about the book is at the very beginning, you have instructions on how to build what I would say your California pantry.
Mm-hmm.
What is the California pantry? And then how does that sort of differ from, let's say, maybe a Alabama pantry?
Yeah. Well, I think the thing about being a California girl is that you can kind of be a California girl no matter where you are.
It's state of mind, right?
Yeah, it's all state of mind. It's how you build your pantry. It's how you approach cooking. It's all about balance. So the pantry is, you know, things that everyone has in their pantry. Olive oil, quinoa, chocolates, different spices, things like that, and then really featuring things that are in season along with that.
And then a full avocado larder.
Obviously.
Right?
Obvious. Like, you have to buy them raw hard so they ripen on your counter so no one, like, bruises them but you.
So one of the things I also love about the book is the sentiment of that perfect is overrated.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about that is because when you think of California food and when you think of that, it's not that rustic doesn't come to mind, but you think California, okay, I have to have the perfect tomato, I have to go to the farmer's market, I have to get these white strawberries. You know, it becomes so much pressure that you don't even get in the kitchen.
Right.
So how did you sort of come to that idea that perfect can be overrated and as a hindrance?
Yeah, that's a great question, which I've never really thought about before. But I think, I just think being perfect isn't fun.
Right.
Like when I'm doing an Insta Live or a Snapchat, people love seeing a real kitchen, and when you mess up, you spill, whatever. Like, I think that makes it more approachable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people are so intimidated to cook, it's endearing. So I'm not interested in, like, putting together the most perfect thing that's, like, gorgeous in every which way. I want something that's going to be delicious, doesn't take you a lot of time, and that you feel great about serving.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is about recipes that you would share with people.
Absolutely.
And some of the recipes in there actually come, some other people in your life make cameos in the book as well.
For sure.
Your husband Thomas has a breakfast burrito, your dad has barbecue chicken.
Mm-hmm.
How did you pick the recipes that have obviously inspired your life, been in your life, and then sort of make them your own?
Yeah, so like my dad's barbecue chicken, my mom has a cucumber salad in the book. These are things we grew up eating.
Yeah.
There's a taco skillet bake that my mom used to make, and it was just like taco seasoning, taco meat, cheese, done.
Right.
And so I've put my California spin on it and like made my own taco seasoning or like added some tomatoes, done a different spice rub, and made it into my own.
And how have people felt when they see their recipes?
They love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're so pumped. I mean, my mom is thrilled. She doesn't even love cooking, but she has like 3 recipes in the book or something. She feels great.
Does anyone ever be like, forget that you've zhuzhed their version up and been like, yeah, that's as good as I made it. And you're like,
No, it's not.
Yeah,
yeah. My dad. There's another recipe in the book for my dad. It's a beer bread, and it's just like,
when he that makes beer bread it, looks awesome.
It's so good, but he makes just a very simple beer bread, and I'm like, I want pepper jack and bacon and scallions and jalapenos and all these things in it. And he's like, yeah, that's really good. That's a great idea. I'm like, you should make it like this. Take it and run.
Beer bread is something of our parents. My mom makes a killer beer bread.
So good.
I know.
Slather some butter on it, a little salt.
I feel like it's not well known.
Let's bring it back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you do have a whole section of the book devoted to carbs.
Yes.
Which, again, not what you'd expect from California. What made you want to put a, like, it's literally, it's carbs, not carbs, it's not one carbs. Or two
no, it's,
bread things here. It's a whole carb section.
Well, okay. Pasta and pizza are my lifelines. Like, you can't say no to either of those. And I think it's interesting, being in LA all the time, like, no one eats carbs. Like, women don't eat carbs, and it's so boring. Like,
I know.
You want to go out and have a pizza or a bowl of pasta and just, like, enjoy yourself. Granted, do it in moderation if you want, but you can't deny yourself of anything. So I'm all about that carb life.
What's your favorite carb recipe
in the book? Currently, I'm obsessed with the jalapeno and pepperoni pizza.
Ooh.
It's delish.
You know, the pizza thing is a good example of what I like about this cookbook, too, because you show people a lot of bases of just like, here's your basic pizza dough, and then you give them variations of it.
Yeah, throughout the seasons.
Yeah, throughout the seasons, which is great, even though you don't always think of California as seasonal.
Right.
It actually is very seasonal, it's just that you can grow something in every season.
Yeah, it's true.
But what made you want to offer variation instead of being like, this is my, like, this is my one pizza recipe?
Yeah, because I do make different pizzas depending on the season. Like, I'm very much inspired by the Santa Monica Farmers Market in Hollywood on Sundays.
Sure.
And whatever's there, I will somehow take home and turn it into a pizza. So I think a lot of those recipes, and just like there's a pizza for the fall, it has pulled pork on it. Mm. You're not going to eat that in like the spring or the summer.
Don't tempt me.
I mean, you
don't tempt me with a good time.
But like you're making pulled pork for game days and all that, which is in the fall and the winter. So like, why not repurpose that pork and put it on a pizza and have, you know, for whatever.
Of course. Now, the pulled pork is awesome. The beer bread is awesome. And that recipe of like, what's your favorite recipe is sort of a terrible thing. But which of these recipes in the new book sort of best capture the story of who you are or encapsulate your journey?
Great question. Man, it's so hard to pick a favorite. I would say that some of the salads are really near and dear to my heart because I think so often people don't like salad because they just make boring salads.
Sure.
But they can be really entertaining and vibrant and colorful and have so many different textures. Gosh, there's a strawberry cheesecake popsicle in the book, which I feel like is kind of it's like my past life as a really picky eater and like my life is now eating everything coming together.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love them all.
You love them all. Can't pick your favorites.
No.
So it's been a long journey, you know, from eating buttery noodles to now having 1,700 recipes, two cookbooks, something like that. What's the one piece of advice that you would give to someone who sort of would want to go on the same journey that you've gone on?
Yeah, I would say kind of what I said earlier, be like, figure out what your voice is and then be authentic. Like, don't try and do something you can't speak to. It's not gonna come out well. People are gonna see through it. And it's just not worth your time, like, to try and be something you're not. So figure out what you want to say and do it.
Awesome. Well, Gabi, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm sorry we're ending this with a trash can dumping right outside.
That, such is life.
I feel like that's like the buzzer. It's like wrap it up.
Time to go.
But where would people get the book if they want and should get this book?
Yeah, the book's available everywhere books are sold. It's on Amazon. There's a whole section on my blog dedicated to it with the various links, independent bookstores and all that jazz. So
awesome.
whatsgabicooking.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Can't wait to cook from this book.
We have another song from the archives. Then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org. Thank you.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We have Active Bird Community here in studio. Hello, boys.
How's it going?
Hey.
You want to go around the shipping container, introduce yourselves?
Sure. I'm Tom.
I'm Andrew.
Hey, it's Quinn and Zach.
Share a mic, share a voice, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You guys grew up together.
Yes,
we did. Hastings-on-Hudson,
mm-hmm.
which is a great town name. Does anyone ever abbreviate it, like HOH?
Oh, yeah.
You better believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like what's the, use it in a sentence for me.
I love HOH. Yeah. It's what it be. I'll die for that town.
Has anyone said that?
Probably.
Probably.
Yeah.
In like a lyric?
Oh, yeah.
Or an affirmation?
A lot of good rap groups come from
really?
That. No, not really.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You all met when you were super young in middle school. Mm-hmm. How old were you and how old are you now?
We're all like 24, I think, right?
And how old were you when you met?
Like second grade, a long time ago.
Yeah.
We started the band when we were 11, but we knew each other, you know, when we were playing outside and stuff like that.
Were you all playing music at the same time, or were you able to guide someone's like, well, we've already got vocals and guitar, so we're going to really need you on drums, or we're going to need you on rhythm?
I think I started taking guitar lessons when I was in fourth grade, and then our previous drummer, Quinn, joined the band like a couple years ago, so we didn't grow up together.
Yeah.
He's an outlier. He's not part of the original core group.
But still from HOH.
No, not even.
No.
No, I'm from Fo-Town, Phoenix, AZ. Valley of the Sun.
Yeah. So he's not as important as the rest of us,
mm-hmm.
but we met.
Is there a deep shame? This is actually just an intervention. Is there a deep shame? It's okay. You're in a safe space.
No, I feel very, these people empower me. They lift me up and they
put you down.
They put me down. Sometimes they put me down. More
I mean,
often
for,
than not,
for a band down. That writes about relationships and people, I should hope so.
Yeah. Yes.
I should hope so.
There's always a yin-yang to everything that we do.
Yes. So you formed. There was an original foursome, but the three of you stuck together. And same
right.
band name, same everything from 11 till now.
Mm-hmm.
How has it evolved?
Oh, how has it evolved? I think starting at a young age, you don't really have any opinions on music when you're that little. Like, you don't know what it is, so you just kind of go off of, like, I want to play rock music because that's loud and like you can yell and like do whatever you want. So our taste kind of developed through the band, I think. I think through writing music, we kind of figured out the kind of music that we like. So in that sense, I think there was an evolution in our sound. We didn't kind of, if we started, you know, 2 years ago, I think it'd be like, let's make this like indie rock band that sounds like X, Y, or Z. And like, I love this music. It would be a lot more, I think premeditated and conscious of itself, but I think it evolved through just us experimenting a lot with each other and our own tastes.
Well, it's interesting. When people form bands in their mid to late 20s, they're all coming from different experiences, different tastes and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty collective. You know, you start at 11, you're probably all spending your time together.
Yeah.
Has there been any influences that you can call that one person has brought into the other, or has it been almost this communal brotherhood, shared experience where you're all discovering things at the same time and coming from the same focus point?
I think we discovered a lot of things at the same time, but there are also things that I think each individual bandmate like brought in, probably from like our parents or like older siblings or something like that.
Oh, what were the parents and older siblings' influences?
All right, I'll go first. My dad loves like New Wave and loves the Pixies. So the first show he took me to was like a Pixie show at Jones Beach. I was in fifth grade, and I got this shirt of Black Francis, kind of like naked, hunched over, and it looks like he's either holding like his dick or he's giving a thumbs up, and it's unclear. And I wore that
probably both
to school, yeah.
Probably both.
When I was in fifth grade, and it made my teacher uncomfortable, but no one told me to take it off. But so I don't know. I don't know if that's an influence for our band, but I definitely a musical.
Definitely the shirt was. I remember it.
You remember that shirt, right?
Oh, of course, classic. My dad was super into like classic rock, so you know, like the Doors, the Beatles, Bob Dylan, you know, standards at this point. But
classics.
At a young age, I just didn't get it at all, and I liked whatever bullshit I was listening to on YouTube. But then in high school, I was like, okay, this is fucking amazing.
Like, so, an epiphany moment.
Yeah, which was cool. I remember, like, being 16 and being like, Led Zeppelin 1 is amazing. You know what I mean? Like, I'm You're so like, happy.
Guys.
Yeah.
Paul and John.
Yeah, no,
that
exactly.
That could be us.
Yeah. So,
Dad, you were right.
Yeah, pretty much.
My dad raised me on the Grateful Dead. Major Deadhead. We saw John Mayer rip it with the Dead just a couple months ago at Citi Field.
How does he feel about John Mayer stepping in?
John Mayer's really good. Honestly, John, if you're listening, I'm a huge fan. Really, he's an amazing performer. But it's weird going to Grateful Dead shows because it's like the only show that I feel like I go to where like anyone under the age of 50 is like the outlier at the show, which is like most, in most cases when I bring my dad out to shows, he's kind of the old man in the back. But when we go to these Grateful Dead shows, I'm kind of like I have no idea what I'm really watching because I didn't really experience that band. So it's cool.
My parents' tastes were probably closer to Andrew's. A lot of the old standards, classic rock that my dad listened to. Also a lot of Frank Sinatra, a lot of that. And we lived in Phoenix, so it was like my parents were trying to avoid listening to all of the country music that their friends in Phoenix, Arizona would listen to. So they would try and listen to like 80s, classic rock, just like anything but country. So I just grew up pretty much trying to avoid country music, but I've come to appreciate pretty much everything at this point.
And have you two always shared songwriting responsibilities?
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, it's changed over the years, I mean, when we first started the band when we were 11, Tom was the only one that knew how to write a song, so he was like the...
You can go first.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and it was like, this band has been like song by song. When we started, we had one song or two songs, and we're like, this feels so good, let's go to the next song, and now we're here, I remember an early album, I think I sang most of it. And then there's an album where I only have like one or two songs, and now it's changed. But I don't know. That freedom has always been there. We've always just loved to like write together.
I think also there's no. Again, we've been doing it for so long, blah blah blah. But like, there's no stress of like I'm not gonna get my moment or my chance because we're just gonna do this forever. So it's not like there's no time concern about like. I didn't get enough of my voice on this record, or I didn't write enough songs. It's just like, I'll just fucking do it on the next one.
It's like, oh, there's 10 songs. You have 6 and I have 4. Yeah. So we need to like get one of the really good songs out for my mediocre one.
Right.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
And also like a song that like, let's say Tom isn't singing, he's, playing guitar or like soloing and like same for me. So, it's a good time.
Can we hear a song?
Sure.
Hell yeah.
What are you going to play for us first?
So we're going to play our newest single. It's called Baby, It's You. And I actually sang this one.
Here we go. Active Bird Community live on Snacky Tunes.
I don't know why I want this to be yours just for you. I don't care for what you care for I am only just for you, and it breaks my heart in two, 'cause baby it's you, baby it's you. Now it breaks my heart. Baby, it's you. Baby, it's you. When I'm lost, middle of nowhere, I really don't care, 'cause I'm with you. And it breaks my heart in two, 'cause baby, it's you. Baby, it's you. Mm-hmm. breaks my heart in two. 'Cause baby, it's you. Baby, it's you. It breaks my heart in two. 'Cause baby, it's you.
A lot of your record deals with this really interesting dichotomy of the pain of experiences and the empowering nature of forgiveness. I definitely was not thinking about that when I was 24. When did you evolve from just a kid being like, I want to play rock because it's loud, into the psychology and kind of the depth of your songwriting? Well, how did that evolve, and when did that begin to creep in and become a focal point of the songs that you were writing?
I think... ever since a young age, the songs that we would write were pretty, serious or like trying to be in depth, even though if we didn't really know what that meant or how to do it. But I think it became, at least for me personally, I got more comfortable with it on this record, being like a little bit more honest about certain experiences or trying to speak to things that have actually happened to me in my life and be like a little less vague about stuff. And that's scary. Because you have a band, you're with like your friends, you're like, we can just play music because it feels good. Like, this place doesn't have to be something where I am digging deep into things that make me uncomfortable, or like, I want this to be like a happy, fun place, which is cool for a while. You know, like through high school into college, that was like a good, it's fun. But I think at sometimes you need to, as a group, kind of like dig in a little more. And I think with this record, that was kind of us doing that. And it took a lot of like communication and trust.
What was that communication?
Well, I think we had never really written a record like all at once together. And we're like, every note, every word on this record was something that we all agreed on, as opposed to like, I got this song, Angie's got that one, let's get to like 8 or 9 and then we're done. So I think the communication was like, I'm going to sing some songs about like my relationship with my mom, or like I'm going to explore like divorce, or like growing up this way and not really knowing what was going on, or like feeling like you want to just throw your life away. Like, I'm going to talk about some of that shit and like say some names of people. And since you guys are in this band, I want you to like be okay with that. And luckily they were all just like, fucking hell yeah, let's do that.
And did that come in like, hey guys, I got a demo? Or was it a group discussion where the four of you sat down and said, this is the direction we're going to go in because it's time and we can't just keep pretending that these are on the surface songs or just...
I don't know. I think it... We went to Stone Harbor, New Jersey, where Quinn's family lives, and they were like so generous and like just opened up this part of their house where we can just set up and like demo and make songs together. And I knew, at least for me, I was like, I'm going to try and write as many songs as I can. I'm going to try and be as like honest and just like, and just be truthful. And when we started writing these songs, at first it was kind of just on like a surface level. Like, I like these songs, let's play these. We're thinking more of like the structure of the music. And then we had one night we were up until like 3 a.m. and like really drunk. And I just like had to like get it off my chest what the song Amends, which is on the record, is about. Which I don't really feel like going into right now, but after I explained that to them, it was a vulnerable moment, even with people I've known forever. And I think the way that you guys responded to that was like really, beautiful and also just like empowering. And it became very clear to me that they were going to stand behind whatever I had to say, no matter what, and not be like, dude, can we just play like 4 chords and like get a catchy hook or whatever? Like, it wasn't like that at all. It was like, you guys were all on board, and I thought that was awesome.
And how does that change the music behind the lyrics? It's a really interesting point where it's like, we're not just gonna play like 4 chords, happy music. How does that change the instrumentation and the notes that you're putting, or even the rhythms that you're playing behind the songs?
I think for us, you know, especially with our songwriting, you know, we've never felt this pressure to, like, actually, you know, write something with a theme that connects and has this whole message behind it. We've always just kind of, especially, you know, the three of us who've been together for so long, have shared these experiences. And so when Tom brings something to the table, you know, obviously we support him with everything he does, but, you know, there is some level of understanding that comes with growing up with someone and wanting to support them. And in terms of, you know, the instrumentation, you know, I think a lot of the songs that get brought to the practice space or wherever we are, we all kind of work together to turn them into what they end up being. And we all kind of, you know, work together. And I think, you know, when Quinn joined the band, that was a huge step in a new direction for us in terms of how we were composing our songs and, you know, the direction we wanted to go in, especially with this album.
Yeah, when I joined this band, I was definitely an outsider, like, in many ways. I met Tom at college in Fordham, and I had seen Active Bird Community play and was always blown away by their live sound, their live presence. Everybody knew who they were and wanted to be next to them and listening to them, and it was just magnetic. And I was lucky enough to just get close to these three guys and just join the band. But I think that the lyrics on Amends are the most personal lyrics to date for this band. And the music is almost coherent with those lyrics in the sense that they're digging deeper and they're trying to do something that just hasn't been done before in this project. You know, both of the music and the lyrics are sort of trying to tackle the same odds of just changing direction and looking inward as opposed to looking outward and tackling the scary monsters that you think about and would rather not sing about, but we're going to do it anyway.
Can we hear another song?
Sure.
What are you going to play for us?
This one's called Unwind With Me. Spread them over me again, 'cause I can't feel that much. And now you're really over there, and I'm 1,000 pounds of scared. I'll fuck this up. You said it once, you said it twice. I don't need your advice. I'm unraveling everything. I need it slower than before. I need to call somebody more up late, frustrated. Can't unwind. You cut your teeth to catch the tide overworked, unassured of what it's worth. Want something more to say? You know you can. Thank you.
You are on the precipice of a new record coming out mid-September in Bar Souk, Amends. How's it feel? While it is still, it's done, but it's not out. What are the emotions?
Off the bat, it's fucking terrifying. It's so fucking scary. But it's great at the same time. If you're thinking about it strictly from a music perspective, like, I made these songs, I can't wait to show everybody. That's great. Like, I'm really looking forward to that. And that's basically what it is at the end of the day. But, you know, all of the time and the preparation to roll them out in a way that you think is coherent, in a way that you think people will connect to it, like all that behind the scenes planning, really just gives you a lot of time to get in your head about things.
What are you in your head most about? All of you.
Yeah.
Each and every one of you. What are you in your head the most about that could go well or could be like, I can't, why are we doing this? Turn off the lights. Pull the cover of the head.
I guess it has to do with the personal nature of a lot of it. You know, it's like, do people, first of all, you're like, people even give a shit about, you know, whatever personal things I have to say. Another thing is like, will they understand it? Will the people that are closest to me that are probably implicated in the songs appreciate that or be a little weirded out? Just kind of like, how is this going to come off? And again, that's like my gut feeling. That's like the, on the surface, how I feel. But at the end of the day, we realize that this is about something that we've been doing for so long. So that feeling quickly goes away because, like I said before, every decision we made was agreed on. We didn't leave that studio being like, fuck, like we should have done this. Like, hopefully no one will notice that. Or like, we left feeling really confident, and I still feel confident in that way. Yeah, what about you?
Yeah, I'm just, I'm excited for people to hear it and to connect with it. I think, you know, my favorite part about songwriting is, hoping that it will help somebody on the other side. Because I've, you know, experienced that with so many other people's songs and music, you know. So the chance that anybody out there will hear it and, it might help them in a moment, like, that's exciting. So I'm really excited for that. Feeling good about it.
I think that, you know, it's difficult to manage our expectations sometimes, especially, you know, leading up to this release, because you put so much time and energy and thought and just like your entire being essentially into creating something like this, like an album. And then it just kind of like goes into the world and we all kind of just cross our fingers for, you know, this quote unquote success. But I think we have been pretty good about, you know, leveling ourselves and kind of, you know, just touching base on why we started doing this and why we're doing it in general. And, you know, it doesn't, you know, when you think about it, it has very little to do with, you know, how well the album is going to do or what this is going to mean for us moving forward. It's more about us maturing and like, you know, continuing our careers in music, and really focusing on each other and like what we're trying to do and just trying to forget about like, you know, is this album going to sell X amount of copies or, you know, are these shows all going to be sold out? Cause that's, you know, once you get in your head about that kind of stuff, it becomes very, very difficult to cope with, you know, what's going on. And you kind of just have to remove yourself from that whole, mentality.
I think as the drummer, with a drummer's perspective, I don't have a direct line to the self-conscious insecurities that a lyricist has about their lyrics, or their music. So I can confidently say that every song on this album is just amazing. I think it's incredible. But I don't carry with me, you know, the self-conscious feelings that somebody has when they write words about something very personal. I get to do what I've done since I got to Fordham, which is watch Tom, Zach, and Andrew perform. I look at their backs, and it's always amazing, like, to watch them. And I'm just a part of something that's a lot larger than myself, and I'm really excited about the record in general because of that. Coming from that perspective is a lot of weight off my shoulders. But I'm terrified because they let me sing a song on the record, and I'm pretty scared about that. But overall, I'm not really scared. I think the record's dope.
We're terrified, too.
It's a really good song.
Does this mean that you will also be doing it live for the upcoming tour?
Yeah.
That's TBD.
Yeah.
How TBD?
You're saying it's yes. D. It's 100%. It's
a, there's no T or B.
It's a D, yeah.
Just get ready. Mm. And is it going to be the awkward moment where we have to like pull the microphone down? And
we switch.
Oh, you switch? Yeah, you drums, oh.
Though. Yeah.
So you're like dead front and center.
Yeah, you heard it here first.
Amazing.
We're switching. We're switching it up.
How are your dance moves?
That's TBD as well.
Okay.
That'll be, yeah, it's a hard TB.
Yeah, you've got some time in the van.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
You're going out on tour. Mm-hmm. The record comes out in September. We want to make sure we have time for one more song. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah.
Where can people find you? Listen to the record, pre-order the record, check out tour dates.
Slater, what's up?
We have a dope website. It's really sick. It's www.activebirdcommunity.com.
Not taken.
Yeah, only two W's. Yeah.
Well, I guess if you started when you were 11, it was definitely like Wild Wild West of the internet. So
yeah.
Oh,
I got it.
Yeah, yeah, we got that domain early on.
I was like, first. 13. I was like, I don't know how to make a website, but I'll just buy this fucking, yeah.
It's still like 99 cents a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've just been paying for it for years. That's why I'm broke.
Andrew's never paid for the website. yeah, you can find everything there. Our Instagram has the link in it, too, to find all our stuff. And it shouldn't be too hard. You know, if you search Active Bird Community in Google, it's pretty much us or, like, some bird watching stuff. So just sort through that. You should be able to find it.
Perfect. Well, thanks for coming by.
Thank you
to Chef Gabby Dalkin as well. Make sure to check out her new cookbook. What are you going to take us out with?
We're going to do a cover of Neil Young.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. This is the last episode of the summer session. Enjoy the rest of August and wherever your long weekend may take you. And we'll be back in September with another episode of Snacky Tunes. Take us out.
Baby, mellow my mind. Make me feel like a schoolboy on good time. Juggling nickels and dimes. Satisfied with the fish on the line. I've been down the road. I've come back on some whistle on a railroad track. Ain't got nothing of those feelings that I had. Something so hard to find. A situation that can casualize your mind.
Listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.